Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Galp Energia's first quarter of 2015 results conference call and strategy execution update. Today's conference is being recorded. I will now pass the floor to Mr. Pedro Diaz, Head of Strategy and Investor Relations.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Galp Energia's 2015 first quarter results conference call. Joining me today is our new CEO, Carlos Gomes da Silva. Carlos will start with our strategy execution update, and Felipe will go over our first quarter results. At the end, we will be available for Q&A, also with Thor, our E&P COO. Now I would like to welcome Carlos in his new role in a company that he knows so well. As some of you know, Carlos has been working in the oil and gas industry for over 20 years now. He has been with the company since the early '90s and has actively participated in its transformation from an Iberian downstream and gas company into a truly integrated player focused on exploration and production. For the past 8 years, Carlos was first Executive Director responsible for the marketing oil division, and more recently, in charge of the gas and power division, developing the LNG trading business and consolidating our presence in Iberia. We wish him all the best in his new role. Please bear in mind that we'll be making several forward-looking statements, including about our plans and expectations. Actual results and outcomes may differ materially due to factors which are presented on the disclaimer shown at the beginning of our presentation. I will now hand over to Carlos. Thank you.
Thank you, Pedro, for the introduction, and good morning to you all. It's really a pleasure to host this call for the first time as CEO of Galp. Let me start by saying that I have worked very closely with Manuel over the past years. I would like to thank him for all his support over the years, and particularly during this transition period where we have worked together to make it as smooth as possible. Manuel did an outstanding job as CEO of Galp, strongly contributing to the transformation of the company. His tireless dedication to this company and his kindness will be missed. On behalf of the whole firm, thank you, Manuel. Today's Galp strategy is clear, as highlighted by the company during our recent Capital Markets Day. As CEO, I will ensure the continuity of our strategy and in setting ambitious goals. Now it's time for execution. I emphasize, it's time for execution. I will be particularly focused on executing and exploring value upside of our upstream project, as well as guaranteeing their sustainability in the long run, capitalizing on our world-class assets, namely the pre-salt projects in Brazil and in Mozambique. We will continue to promote the optimization of our refining and marketing businesses, and we will continue to reinforce our trading activities and consolidate our Iberian outlet within the gas and power division. Our strategic path to deliver growth and create shareholders value will proceed with strict financial discipline in order to maintain a solid capital structure. To do that, I will rely on my colleagues at management team. On that note, I would like to welcome Tiago Pestana and Pedro Ricardo, the new executive directors. I'm confident that Tiago will bring relevant contributions to the company with his experience in the retail sector, while Pedro will contribute with his experience and deep understanding of the natural gas market, as he was previously responsible for the LNG trading business. Let's now go over our presentation for today with a brief strategy execution update and comments on our main financials. Operationally, it was a stronger quarter, especially if we compare with the Q1 last year, which has been particularly challenging. On exploration and production, our production reached over 41,000 barrels of oil equivalent per day. On refining and marketing, our realized margin amounted to $5.9 per barrel as we benefited from the improvement in the refining environment. As for the gas and power, LNG traded volumes hit a new high in the quarter of around 1.2 BCM. Our results reflect our vertically integrated profile as we were able to reach stronger operating results even under a challenging oil price environment. I would highlight that this scenario of low prices for oil and natural gas has been supportive for demand. In Iberia, after many, many years of significant declines, we have seen oil demand stable for 6 quarters, and this is first quarter with visible growth of around 5%. Demand for natural gas in Iberia has also increased. In such a challenging scenario, our integrated portfolio profile has served as well. But as you know, we continue to be focused on the execution of our development projects, mainly in Brazil. And I'm pleased to say that Lula Iracema continues to deliver above the initial expectations. As you can see on slide 6, FPSO 1 and 2 continue to run at full capacity and with no major operational constraints. This means that the first unit is producing at plateau for almost 3 years now, whereas the second unit in Lula, Northeast, is producing at plateau since last September. As for the third FPSO, production continues to ramp up. The third producer well was connected during March, leading production from Cidade de Mangaratiba to increase to around 100,000 barrels of oil per day, which is outstripped expectations. This means that each well in Iracema South is now producing over 30,000 barrels of oil per day, which is outstanding by any standard. The fourth producer well and an additional injector well should be connected during the third quarter. For now, we are maintaining our guidance for achieving full capacity by the first half of 2016. As for the next FPSO to be allocated to Iracema, the FPSO Cidade de Itagüí, all works are proceeding according to plan, and we expect the unit will start production during the first quarter of this year. The FPSO is currently undergoing integration works at the Brasfel shipyard in Brazil, and the infield works continue to progress with a total of 9 wells drilled to date. The FPSO number 5, Cidade Maritã, which will be allocated to Lula Alto, is currently sailing from China to Brazil, where it will undergo the final integration works at the Brasa shipyard. The number 6 unit, Cidade Saquarema, continues to be converted in China and should sail away to Brazil rather shortly. This means that within 1 year or so from now, we will have 3 additional units producing in Lula, Iracema, or another 450,000 barrels of oil per day capacity, 45,000 barrels net to Galp, or more than double current overall production. Regarding the replicant units, the P66, the first replicant, the integration works are progressing at the Brasfels. The P67 and the P69 continue to be constructed in Brazil, whereas the P68 is under construction in Cusco shipyard in China. We have no new guidance, good or bad, for what we already share with you at the CMD. Moving now to Angola. Development works continue to progress, most notably in Lianzi and in Block 32. Lianzi is on track to start production in the second half of this year. Regarding Block 32, we have engineering and procurement works ongoing, and the conversion of the FPSOs has already started. In Mozambique, we are paving the ground to support our investment decision for the offshore solution this year and for the onshore solution in 2016. As we have stated before, the main goal here is to get a solution which is as competitive as possible, and ultimately a development with robust economics. Before I pass the floor to Philippe, I must highlight the performance of our downstream and gas business. Our refining and marketing business posted a strong set of results, which supported refining margins in the international market and with stronger oil demand in Iberia. As for gas and power business, we reached a new high in the LNG trading sales in the quarter. This is also a result of our previous efforts to sustain the LNG trading activity in the medium term. Our team is permanently looking into new markets and opportunities, and that is why we have been able to consistently deliver a strong performance. And now I will hand over to Philippe to go over our results this quarter. Please, Philippe.
I'm on slide 11. Group EBITDA was 398 million euros, significantly up year on year, but flat quarter on quarter. As Carlos mentioned, we took advantage from the improving European refining margins, which actually were negative in Q1 last year. E&P EBITDA was down 10% year-on-year to 94 million euros as the higher production and the favorable dollar did not manage to offset the very large fall in average sales prices. Refining and marketing EBITDA was up to 165 million, benefiting from the recovery in European margins and from the stronger dollar. We have also benefited from the higher availability of our refineries and from the higher marketing volumes. Gas and power EBITDA reached 131 million euros, that's up 7%. EBITDA from supply and trading of natural gas and LNG increased by 28 million euros on higher volumes and sourcing optimization. However, this was partially offset by the lower earnings from the regulated infrastructure and power businesses. EBIT was 250 million euros, reflecting the improved EBITDA, with some increase in amortizations related to the ramp-up of FPSO number 2 and the commissioning of FPSO number 3. Below the EBIT line, I would highlight the increase in financial costs. Interest expenses were down year on year, but within financial costs, we have FX costs from a stronger dollar against the euro on some trade payables, and also a 18 million euro in the net mark-to-market of hedging instruments, which are mostly related to refining margin hedgings. Under IFRS, our bottom line was slightly negative, reflecting the inventory effects of a declining Brent and impairments in both Angola and Brazil. As for CapEx on the next slide, of the 283 million euros invested during the quarter, 96% was allocated to E&P. Unsurprisingly, most of the CapEx was channeled to the drilling of development wells and the construction of FPSOs and subsea systems, as well as the construction of the Kadyunash pipeline. On our balance sheet on slide 13, you will see that working capital was down by 105 million euros in the quarter. This was mainly driven by the decrease in the value of inventories following lower crude and product prices. At the end of March, net debt stood at 2.3 billion euros. That is 167 million euros less than at the end of the last year. This comes about as a result of a neutral free cash flow during the quarter and the benefit of the dollar appreciation on our cash balances. If we consider the outstanding loan to Sinopec as cash and equivalents, then net debt was 1.4 billion euros or one times net debt to EBITDA. Our liquidity remains high at 3.1 billion euros, of which cash of 1.1 billion, the loan to Sinopec of 925 million, and we have undrawn credit lines of 1.1 billion euros as well. With this, we're happy to take your questions. Thank you.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please press the star or asterisk key followed by the digit one on your telephone. Please ensure that the mute function on your telephone is switched off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, please press star one to ask a question. Please note that today, it's only two questions per person is allowed. We will now take our first question from Clint Oswald from Bernstein. Please go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon. Thank you. Yeah, my first question really related to Brazil, nothing to do with the operations, which seem to be moving ahead fine. Just if there is a scenario where Petrobras may offer kind of increased equity participation in some other licenses or yet to be developed fields, can you just talk about Galp's appetite to increase your own exposure to those potential assets going forward? My second question would be related just to the LNG side of the business, where price is obviously much weaker, but you've still kind of posted a healthy number here. You speak about natural gas sourcing optimization. Maybe could you just expand on that point and some of the opportunities that you still see within LNG? Thank you.
Thank you, Oswald, for your two questions. In relation to Petrobras and to Brazil, we don't comment what Petrobras portfolio management will be, but we have good resources on Brazil. We keep our focus on execution our projects in Brazil. We hope that if and when any disposal of Petrobras assets will come to the market, we promptly analyze them. If it was something that we think we could have value, we will be around. For the time being, we are fully concentrated with our activities on the developing and maximizing value on the existing portfolio asset bases. In what relates to the LNG, and namely to the sourcing of our supply, what I can tell you is that our team is permanently screening the market to see where we can improve our sourcing activities. As you can see, and we have already disclosed to you, we have structured an operation in a medium-term basis that guarantees to Galp that in the next couple of years, we will benefit from having an allocation of our long-term contracts to a structured trading. Meanwhile, what we are doing is benefiting of the arbitrage between the spot and the long-term contracts. It was the case in the last couple of quarters. As the Brent prices are falling down, the long-term contracts are more expensive, and therefore, we are trying to optimize that. For the coming years, we are already working deeply in order to secure the contracts that starts to end up by 2020. And I recall all of you that the first one ends in 2020 and the fourth one in 2025. And we have already several alternatives to postpone and to secure that long-term supply. But of course, we don't comment until the moment that we close those contracts. What I can tell to you is that we are working together with the existing suppliers as well, new alternative sources of supplying in the different to diversify our risk.
That's great. Thank you very much.
We will now take our next question from Haitham Rashid from Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good afternoon, gentlemen. Two questions from my side, please. So firstly, small one on production, and just in relation to the outlook for the rest of the year, if I look at sort of the Capital Markets Day guidance and the sort of 30-35% growth we should expect to see over the course of the year, if we sort of annualize your current production for 1Q, then you're pretty much there. I just wondered if you could just give us a sense of how we should think about this next connected well in 3Q, whether actually that 30-35 now looks quite conservative relative to what you're seeing at the moment, or whether there might be some other downtime or declines elsewhere that might offset some of the production you bring on stream from that third well, fourth connected well. And my second question is a little bit more on strategy. And Carlos, perhaps if I can ask Oswald's question on Brazil a slightly different way. As you think about Mozambique and developing sort of Brazil beyond BMS-11 over the coming years, how should we think about sort of prioritizing your sort of capital during that period? If I think about Petrobras potentially selling down assets or interest in some of these other assets outside of the producing assets at the moment, for example, is that an opportunity that you see for Galp to actually farm down some of its own interests or actually monetize some of that to kind of then put into perhaps Mozambique? Or do you feel comfortable being able to develop some of those plus Mozambique over that time period? If you could give us a sense on that, that would be great. Thank you.
Thank you, Haitham, for your questions. In what relates to the production, I think we have several contributions. Some of them, they are all positive, and we are not seeing the other part of the glass. Let me deepening a little bit my thoughts. We have experienced from Cidade de Mangaratiba an amazing production with only three wells. We overcome up to 100,000 barrels per day just having three wells. As you might be aware that this is an outstanding achievement for our industry. And therefore, the guidance that we have gave to you recently in CMD has to remain the same. You should also not forget that we are still in the discussions in relation to the unitization process in Lula, Iracema, and therefore it is something that we have to see what is coming in the next coming months. Nevertheless, and as I've shared with you, we are anticipating that in the second half of this year we will have an additional well in Cidade Mangaratiba, and once we have the Cadiunas pipeline fully available by the end of this year, and the new production well in Cidade Mangaratiba, new production will come to the spot. Of course, we will have also Cidade Itagüí starting production by the end of this year, and the two new units for the next year. So when you balance unitization, outstanding production, and as well some maintenance work that have to be done, I think the guidance that we have gave to you is still updated. We will do a new update by the second half of this year, and possibly when we will be analyzing the second Q results, we can have more more insights on that. In relation to strategy, and you have balanced the Brazilian assets and as well the Mozambique assets. We prioritize, by all means, the BMF-11. So our focus and keeping our health balance sheet will be on BMF-11. That doesn't mean that we didn't want to look to what is around. So the dynamic asset management of our portfolio remain very, very alert in order to see if any kind of possible alternatives could come to the spot. If and when Petrobras will come to the market with any disposal assets, we obviously stay alert and we will decide on that moment. In relation to Mozambique, Mozambique is an amazing asset that has a true potential for the coming decades. Where we are now completely focused is getting the best solution in technical-wise and financing-wise, because we think that for the coming years, this will be one of our key assets. And therefore, we are not considering for the time being any different approach to these assets from what we have already shared with you. But we will keep our eye, and we will be very, very committed in order to get a feasible and valuable solution for the Mozambican asset.
Okay, thank you.
We will now take our next question from Bruno Silva from BPI. Please go ahead.
Good morning, everyone. First of all, congratulations and good luck to the renewed management team of Galp. I have two questions. The first one related with asset impairments, namely in the Amazon basin. You also mentioned that the exploration works are still ongoing. Can you please provide the investment that is being committed this year in these new exploration wells, in order to try to anticipate what could be further asset impairments in the basin? And the second question is related with the dividend policy, the 20% growth that you provided the market in the Capital Markets Day. I just wanted to confirm if the energy taxes in Portugal and the taxes on LNG profits, if they were assumed in the base case, and whether or not this could produce any sort of change in this guidance. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Bruno, and thank you for your words. I'm sure that the renewed management team will be focusing on our strategy and keep delivering value to all the shareholders. I will pass the Amazonas impairments to Felipe, but before that, let me share with you our view in relation to the dividend policy and as well the LNG taxes. In the dividend policy, what we have integrated in our business case, it is to keep the 20% per year up to 2016 and keep it as it is from 2017 onwards. Of course, depending on our execution performance, we can review that in order to, because we will be in a moment where we start to convert and so by the market, not only by a company that is granting an upside value, but also it is based on a dividend yield-based approach. And therefore, we think that we can review that. But for the time being, you should assume that it is as we have give guidance before. In what relates to LNG taxes, you know, this is a very unique situation. Because what our company has made was going to the internalization of this business, trying to capture value and to support the cash generation the free cash flow generation for the company. We have done that very professionally and with fantastic results. And at the end of the day, what we are seeing is some taxes that are not legally, in our opinion, are not legally applicable. So what we will do is defend by all the means the rights of GALP, and we are prepared to open a litigation in order to protect the value of this company. And therefore, in what relates to cash-wise, we don't anticipate that we will spend money on paying those taxes in the coming years. But it will be a litigation that will take time, and we are plenty convinced that at the end of the day, this is a decision that we will be able to get the confidence of the courts of law, the European institutions, that this rule would not be applicable to our company. So cash wise, it won't affect the company for the coming years. Philip.
Hi Bruno, on Amazonas, we are at the close to the final stages of the exploration, so you should not expect to see any meaningful impairments, even in a worst case scenario. So it would be less than 20 million for sure. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much.
We will now take our next question from Philip Rosa from BESI. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning everyone. First of all, I wish you all the best, Carlos, for your new role and to your team, okay? And secondly, I would like, my two questions would be, the first one, a follow-up question on Brazil and on the ramp-up of Cidade Mangaratiba. So you have reached 100,000 barrels of oil production with just three wells. Could you just let us know why the fourth well is only coming on stream in the third quarter, and could you let us know when do you plan to have the fifth well, which in theory should allow you to reach plateau? So that would be my first question. And related to with this question, I would like to know that there's been a significant number of contracts with rigs being cancelled by Petrobras, or at the time the process of being cancelled. On the one hand, this should allow you to have some cost savings. It would be interesting for you to guide us what you think would be your average daily rent, for instance, in 2016. But should we expect further delays in the development wells going forward, as the reduction of the number of rigs could have a significant impact on the development in the pre-salt? Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Bruno. And thank you, Philip. And I will pass this to Thor, that is around, and I think he can explain to you deeply what is going on.
Thank you very much. Let me first address the issue with regards to Mangaratiba. Let me, as number one, underline what Carlos said in his opening remarks, and which have been repeated a few times. The ramp-up that is going on with Mangaratiba right now, with an average production of more than 30,000 barrels per day, is world-class by any standards. Number two, the next producer in Mangaratiba is expected during the second quarter. We will actually also then have, and very important in order to be able to take out the production potential, also an injector in place. And because it is not only the production capacity, it is really also the injection capacity that is important. Then the two next producers are anticipated in 2016. However, I can share with you that we are doing and are pushing as hard as possible if it is any possibility to anticipate this. But as it is now, they are scheduled, the fourth and the fifth producer, the fifth and the sixth producer, sorry, to come into production in the first half of 2016. When it comes to rigs, we will not do anything with respect to rigs that will jeopardize the ramp-up of production in BMS 11. But of course, we are using the opportunity as the market is now presenting, with respect to see how can we optimize on the cost side. There's a clear and significant potential to lower the cost, and that opportunity is now being explored, initially by, as you have rightly seen from the market, we have been canceling contracts, typically the more expensive contracts. And secondly now, it is being evaluated what is going to be the most effective way of getting new capacity back on stream. And I think it is right to see that we see the rates are coming down in a very rapid manner, and rates in the lower $400,000 per day should clearly be achievable. Thank you.
Thank you.
We will now take our next question from Nitin Sharma from JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Afternoon, gentlemen. Two questions. First one on oil and gas demand in Iberia. You highlighted both of those markets have shown growth. My question is on demand situation in Portugal. So was the trend similar to Iberia, i.e. was there growth in Q1 in Portugal as well? And the second question is on Carcará. You're currently drilling the extension well. Should we expect information on resource potential when you announce the well results for this extension well in Carcará? Thank you.
Thank you, Nathan, for your two questions. I will take the first one. Yes, in terms of what we are experiencing in Iberia and as well in Portugal, the natural gas consumption or demand is increasing, and it is mainly due to the power generation contribution. So in retail markets, and the industry is falling down, but for power generation purposes, it's increasing. And so it's the same path that we are reaching in on Spain in terms of demand. In what relates to the extension well in Carcará, I will pass to Tor that will share with you our view.
So you are correct that the RDA Carcará.
No, I think you can hear me. So you are correct that the RDA Carcará P2 is right now being drilled. It is too early to anticipate any results of that well at this stage, and then when we have the result, it will be with normal procedures. It will be evaluated whether the information is then of such art that it should be communicated to the market according to normal market practices. Thank you.
Thanks.
We will now take our next question from Anish Kapadia from TPH. Please go ahead.
Hi, excuse me. Good morning. I had a couple of questions on Brazil. It was on the replicant FPSOs. What one wanted to just try and get a sense of was where you are in terms of a couple of the FPSOs and what work's left to be done. So specifically on the ones that were due on stream next year, the P66 and P67. I was just wondering, so what work do you see as left to be done on those FPSOs? What are the kind of biggest areas of bottlenecks on those units, and which contracts or integration contracts are at risk over there? And then the second one that I was just interested in was the P69 FPSO for Lula West. I was just wondering if you'd got an idea of what the revised capacity would be of that FPSO. I think you were talking about potentially lowering the capacity over there. Thank you.
Thank you for your two questions. So in relation to the replicants, we are having them on track. We don't have any different guidance, positive or negative, from what have been related to what we have said to you in the CMD. We think that for P66 and P67, the first oil will be in 2017, and we keep that. We are doing all the mitigation measures in order to guarantee that we will be on schedule for those two units, even though we consider what is the complexity that is around the all the suppliers in Brazil. In what relates to P69, the new FPSO that should be allocated to Lula West, we don't have still a final decision. This is something that is discussions, technical discussions are underway, and we think that we can have a flavor in the coming months. So when we will have a possible decision, we will disclose that to the market. Thank you.
Just to follow up on what I was just trying to get a sense of on the P66 and 67, you mentioned you're taking mitigation issues. I just wanted to just get a sense of what are the kind of key issues that you're dealing with at the moment, and what are the milestones that we should be watching for over the next year on those FPSOs?
What I was saying to you is that the difficulties that we were experiencing on financial capacity and as well in technical capacity of some of the suppliers are being dealing within the consortium, within the JV, and we are anticipating some measures that will grant us the possibility to comply with the schedules that we have defined. One of the key issues has to do with the PEC number 3 on the different replicants, and it was because one, as you know, EASA is in a complex financial situation, and therefore we have launched an international tender within the JV, and we are in the border of having a final decision to replace EASA for another entity that will be capable to fully comply with the timetables that we have disclosed to you just 1 month ago. I don't know. I will pass to Tor that could deepen a little bit in relation to the Lula West.
First of all, I would just say that it is 150% correct what you just described, the situation with P66 and P67. It is the PAC tree that is critical line, and hopefully the mitigating actions will be, when it comes to replacing ESA, will be finalized in the very, very near future. When it comes to Lula West, I think your description is also very correct. This is a technical evaluation based on what is the necessary capacity needed for the efficient production of Lula West. These discussions have not been concluded, and still more work remains to be done. So for the time being, no new decisions has been taken on that respect. Thank you.
We will now take our next question from Michael Alsford from Citi. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Thanks for taking my questions. So just a couple from me as well, please. Just coming back to gas and power. Obviously, clearly, refining margins were strong in the quarter, but I think the highlight of the results has been the strength of the gas and power result. If you recall in the Capital Markets Day, only a month ago, as you say, your guidance on gas and power EBITDA was for, 350 to 400 million euros per year. But if I analyze 1Q, we're going to be closer to 525 million euros. So could you maybe help me understand what's sort of more one-off due to good conditions in the quarter? What's more of a structural change perhaps within that business? Just trying to get a sense as to, is 350, 400 very conservative and actually the market's slightly changed on you in the last few weeks, or is it more, say, just a one-off in the quarter? And then just secondly, on Mozambique, you talk about obviously a focus around value. Can I read into that comment perhaps that initial indications that you've seen from contractors around the EPC contracts are too high and the project doesn't fly at those economics? And if that's not the case, can you maybe just update us as to when we should see those bids, I guess, confirmed and the actual timing on FID for that project will be great. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Michael, and thank you for your two questions. In what relates to the LNG business, the gas and power business, to be more general, we can share with you the following. You should keep in mind that we have disclosed to you that the structured trading contracts that we have implemented that will be that will be live up to 2017-2018. So this is the first pillar, the first anchor to stabilize and to cashing the LNG activity. The second one, and this is, I would say, in a medium term, it's sustainable. The second one is a new area of activity that we have launched 2 years ago related with network operations. So we have just started, as you are aware, in Spain, and now we are coming to France, to Belgium, and to Holland, which means that we are acting in very liquid markets in the Central Europe, and that starts to give the first results. The third one, I won't say it is one-off, but should be so as an optimizing our supplying activity. As you are aware, the falling down of the crude prices and therefore the implications in the long-term contract prices had some time lag once they are based on past Brent quotations. Therefore, we have been able to optimize our supply by using what I can call some arbitrage between the spot market and the long-term contracts. Of course, this is the short-term approach. We will have to comply the annual volumes that are contracted with long-term suppliers, and depending on the evolution on the Brent and as well the spot markets, this could be leverage for the future or could be attenuated for the future. But these are the three main contributions for the team. In what relates to Mozambique. Mozambique is an amazing project, is an amazing reservoir, and it should be so not in a short or medium term. We should look to Mozambique as a long-term run for those that are investing over there. Of course, for the kickoff of this project, we have to guarantee at least three things. We have to have the offtake heads of agreements with reliable parts that will grant to us the possibility to marketing the gas. Secondly, we have to have, technically wise, a project that is by any means capable to guarantee that it will deliver without any major concerns and that will be fully efficient with the cost basis very competitive in what relates to the comparable identical projects. And thirdly, we have to guarantee also that we will have a financing structure that could support that project. So if you put all of those three issues in a basket, you have to meet them and to guarantee that by the end and in a long-term evaluation, because there are facilities that won't be only used by the initial unit, but for the entire life of the project. This is something that we have to optimize, since to being competitive in the short, medium term and in the long term, we have to have the best project and a world-class one. There are also some things that I have to share with you in legal terms. So the legal framework has to be already clarifying what relates, namely, in the fiscal terms. So we still are waiting for more clarification in the tax applicable framework that will impact in the project. So concluding and to tell you, we are working hard together with the other consortium partners to make this project a profitable one that could grant value for all the shareholders, not only in the long term, but in the medium term, because we have to guarantee that we have one of the best economic and technical projects around the world, and that could be competitive of what is coming to the surface in the United States and as well in the Australia project. So we have to be competitive on those projects, because Mozambique has an additional advantage, which is this geographical position. So for supplying either the Atlantic Basin and as well the Asian market, this is the best well-positioned project. And therefore, we are obliged to optimize the project.
Great. Thanks so much for your answers. It's been really helpful. Thank you.
Thank you.
We will now take the next question from Mehdi Ennebati from Societe Generale. Please go ahead.
Hi, so good afternoon all. I will ask two questions. The first one regarding your EBITDA guidance for the full year 2015. So if you said 1.1 to 1.3 billion euros, if we take, you know, the up of your range, it looks like in Q1 you've made almost one third of your full year 2015 EBITDA guidance. So as Haitham Rashid said earlier, there might be some upside potential regarding production growth. However, it looks like there is also some upside potential on the refining and marketing side. And I just wanted to know if you agree that your full year 2015 EBITDA guidance looks too conservative post your Q1 earnings release. The second question regards with the Brazil and the Iracema South FPSO ramp up. So you explained that you are trying to get the fifth producing well earlier than H1 2016. I just wanted to know if there are some difficulties on PLSV's availability, given the relatively high, the relatively high activity in the pre-salt area. Thank you.
Thank you, Mehdi, for your two questions. In what relates to the EBITDA guidance, we will keep the one that we have already disclosed to you. And we are doing that not just for being conservative, but because the scenario that we are experiencing is so volatile that if we start to make changes quarter after quarter, we will get wrong in a more dramatic way. So we will keep our guidance, taking in consideration what will happen. But of course we will keep the high on what is going on, depending on which will be the evolution of the major scenario variables. And you see, we are well and highly impacted by refinery margin as well the Brent prices. So therefore, for the time being, we will keep it. In what relates to Iracema South, so the ramp up of Mangaratiba, Cidade Mangaratiba. Yes, you're absolutely right. We will keep our guidance for the fifth producer well for the beginning of next year. And we will start doing all the works that are required for that. I draw your attention for the fact that we will need also to have the gas evacuation working properly, which we will come with the Cabiunas pipeline that should be completed by the second half of this year. And all the questions related with the supply of materials are not impacting for the time being our project. So for the time being, we are comfortable with this guidance.
Thank you very much.
We will now take our next question from Matt Lofting from Nomura. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the presentation, gentlemen. Two quick questions left, please. Just firstly, coming back to gas and power. I mean, Carlos, I think you've sort of talked through some of the main moving parts previously, but I just wanted to focus more specifically on the trading volumes, the growth that we've seen there through the last few quarters and the extent or not to which you think Galp can continue to deliver growth in trading volumes as we go through the next, sort of say, 12 to 18 months, or is there a point based on the sort of the existing business scope where you sort of start to see those volumes level off? Secondly, just on refining, I think Felipe mentioned the impact of sort of mark-to-market on hedging in the net financials. It sounds like a chunk of that is sort of hedging of the refining margin. If you could just give us a bit more color on what proportion of volumes in the downstream business you're hedging, for how long for, and is there liquidity in the market now to look to lock in current margins for the next few quarters? Thanks.
Thank you, Matt, for your two questions. So in what relates to the trading volumes, just to add something to what I have said before, this first Q was particularly strong in what relates to the trading activity. Nevertheless, we are having a guidance for this year to be in a value that is above 7 BCM. So what we are doing now is keeping the track of our structures trading activity, pursuing our network operations in Europe, and benefiting when and if possible the arbitrage that we can have for the market. But that part is the one that we cannot anticipate, and therefore when you see our guidance as a conservative, is because we never put on our business plan the contributions that could come from the volatility of the market, as it was the case with this variation of the Brent. In what related to the refining margins and the hedging that we have done for 2015, and we have no hedging for the coming years, it is about we have taken that decision. We have started that strategy last year, and we have frozen some refinery margins for 2015 based on the fact that the refinery margins will stay very, very low, and therefore we have decided to capture for this year about 30 million barrels. And that is what, when Philippe mentioned to you the mark-to-market, that doesn't mean that it's cash out from the company. That has to do with the fact that comparing with the present market refinery margins, we are sharing with the counterparties that have hedged those margins for us, and therefore we are anticipating that value in our P&L. But with Q on Q, we will have to spend money, and this is, another side, a very positive surprise, even though we are paying for it, because our previous assumption was to having refinery margins below $3 per barrel. So it is a very good and positive news, and we are happy to pay, because we are benefiting of about 70% of our entirely throughput in a positive way.
Great. Very clear. Thanks for your comments.
We will now take our next question from Clegg Hamish from Bank of America Merrill Lynch. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon. Thanks for taking my question. It's Hamish Clegg from Bank of America Merrill Lynch. I had a few quick ones for you. First of all, as you start your new role, Carlos, Can you maybe update a little bit on if you think there's opportunity to impose your own strategic priorities on the company, or do we see things going forward to be the same? And I refer more specifically to the fit and sort of appropriateness of keeping the gas and power business within Galp and the capital it consumes. Would that money be maybe better spent capitalizing on or exploiting opportunities in Brazil? And then my second question is, notably, you're hedged in the downstream. Is this something we can expect going forward as a kind of continuing strategy, or will you look to try and benefit from some of the higher margins we're seeing this year?
Thank you, Amish, for your questions. So in what relates to the strategy, let me very, very, very clear. The strategy of this company has not changed for having changes in the management team. So we pursue and we are fully committed with the company's strategy that was reiterated in our CMD in last March. For that perspective, you should count with us, with fully committed to pursue with the strategy that we have disclosed to you. Nevertheless, and as you have mentioned, we have also referred to you that we will pursue a dynamic management portfolio as long as we respect our financial robustness. And therefore, if and when possible alternatives could appear, namely in Brazil, which is a country where we are already exposed, and we will and we appreciate the level and the quality of the assets where we are participating, of course we can consider on that. But I think that is something that we will do in a very permanently screening and in a dynamic approach, but without losing our momentum and without losing our path in what relates to the execution mode that we are presently doing. Of course, this management team has also the responsibility to start to prepare the company for the new decade that comes in the 20s, but we will only be able to do that if we guarantee a financial structure robust, and at the same time, if the swapping of assets of the new entries that we could consider will bring value to this company. In what relates to the hedging, I would say that we are only do the hedging for this year, and we are not considering to do nothing for the next coming years. But we will continue to look to the markets and to see if and when we consider that could be a moment, we will do it.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
We will now take our next question from Lydia Rainford from Barclays. Please go ahead.
Thanks, and good afternoon, gentlemen. Carlos, firstly, congratulations on the role, and then two very, very quick questions, actually. On the cost side, in the E&P side, the production costs were down to 10% year-on-year. Is that something that – is that sort of in line with what your expectations were, or is and purely a reflection of the volume increase, or are you actually starting to see some wider cost deflation coming through there? And then secondly, and just to come back to the hedging issue in the downstream, just going through the statement, it does say that the refining cash costs were negatively impacted by the hedging of the refining margin. So the 18 million euros that you talked about as being an impact on the finance cost, what was the impact on the cash costs on the refining side? Thank you.
Hi, Lydia. This is Philip. I'll take the second question. Carlos will cover the first one. When we hedged because the futures market was strong. Ideally, we would want to hedge, you know, a significant part of our refining volumes because, as you know, we are quite long refining. in Q1, we have booked within EBITDA 14 million of refining costs related to hedging. This is money we paid out to banks. The 18 million net that is still outstanding is for the forthcoming 9 months to the end of 2015. Reason why we don't have hedges post 2015 is because the market is not there. We don't want to hedge given how bad the derivative markets is pricing in 2016 onwards. I'll pass on to Carlos now.
Hi, Lydia, and thank you for your kind words. In what relates to the E&P costs, just to clarify that in absolute terms, they have increased, of course. What has been impacted was once we have increased our production, the unit costs have been lower. That is the main impact.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
We will now take our next question from Henri Patricot from UBS. Please go ahead.
Yes, hello, everyone. Just one question left from me. On Shell's offer for BG, just wondering if you view that potential change in partner in Brazil, does it make any difference to you? Thank you.
Thank you, Henri, for your question. We are, for the time being, and the experience that we have with BG in the past times were very, very positive. Let me to emphasize that to you because we are happy to participate in a so well-experienced and capable end companies like it is Petrobras and BG. Of course, this business will bring the new experience and the new competence for the JV. Shell is one of the major well-skilled oil and gas companies. Of course, the complementary that Shell could bring to BG is being very positively saw by Galp. I think both Petrobras and Galp will have positive impacts on that entry of Shell. Therefore, we are very happy to see the movement that has been establishing in BG.
Okay, thank you.
We will now take our next question from Thomas Adolff from Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Hi, guys. Just a few quick questions. Going back to the hedging in the downstream, presumably you're more hedged in the first half than the second half. Is that a fair assumption here? Second one, I just wanted to go back to Anish's question on Lula West and the capacity of the FPSO. Presumably, that is related to the reserve downgrade you announced back in March 2014. If you can confirm that. Just another one on Brazil, possibly way too early for you to comment on that, but I guess you've got a model around prospectivity, et cetera, on the G prospect in BM-S-9. Should I think about it, based on your view on the prospectivity as potentially a stranded resource base, unless you can firm up more resources in the vicinity for a tieback? Or is your view that it could potentially be tied back to Carcará or even a standalone? Thank you.
Thank you, Thomas, for your questions. In relation to the hedging of the refinery margins, I have to tell you that is a flat hedging, which means that will affect identically the company for the whole year.
Okay, perfect.
For the second question in relation to Lula West, yes, you are absolutely right. It was the appraisal that bring up news to the surface, and therefore, we are in a technical
perspective, we are considering a different capacity because there are less resources than it was thinkable in the beginning. And therefore, the unit that should be allocated to Lula West should be reviewed. And when we will have a decision, of course, we will came back to the market. In relation to the third question, I will pass it to Tor. Thank you.
So when it comes to the Njuazuma, that is still the plan that to be drilled in this year, by the end of this year, early next year, and it would be way too early to anticipate any outcome of that well, but it is an important well when it comes to the ongoing de-risking activity that is taking place in that prospect. Thank you.
Thank you.
We will now take our last question from Brendan Warm from BMO Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Yes, thank you, gentlemen, and good afternoon. It's Brendan Warren from BMO Capital Markets. Just look, a couple of questions just around Coral and Mamba, and it's just referring again back to your capital markets there, and it's probably a question directed at you, Carlos, in your new role. I guess I'm just, as you sort of head through LNG negotiations or offtake negotiations, and if you can remind me whether you're responsible for your own offtake or if that's being done on behalf of the operator, and just how do you see, call it, the returns on future investments in Coral and Mamba sort of reconcile back with your aspirations or your previously stated aspirations of your ROCE target or returns on capital? I appreciate you sort of mentioned the word profitability from that project and mentioned Australia, but obviously we're all aware returns from LNG have been pretty poor. And can you just have a touch on what sort of equity and financing options are in front of you as you head towards sort of FID for Coral this year and think about Mamba for next year and the year after?
Thank you, Brendan, for your questions. In what relates to the offtake of the gas in Mozambique, just to confirm to you, yes, there is a marketing team that is acting on behalf of the consortium, not the operator of the consortium. So this is a very, I would say, standard way to approach, as we have in so many, many different projects around the world. And therefore, all the partners in the consortium are integrating properly with the required skills, are integrating the marketing team. So in what relates to the returns of this project, we have a wide different level of projects around the world, and it depends on the moment that they have entered in the market. It depends the location, that depends the contracts, the offtake gas contracts that they have done, and of course depends the technology and the way they have been financed. So we are working on those different areas, and unless we have all of them confirmed or at least with a clear view, we cannot disclose a figure that comes from the return of this project. But we are working hard within the JV in order to guarantee that the decision that will be taken will be profitable and sustainable for a project of this dimension. So I will pass to Philippe the part that relates with the funding of the project, that I'm sure he can give you a more deep flavor on that.
Brandon, the financing is what you would expect. So the upstream components is going to be equity financed by the sponsors. The midstream, likely to be a tolling structure, will be very significantly levered. I mean, very, very significantly levered. And we have seen very ample demand by lenders for the project. So we're not expecting any issues with raising financing, assuming a bankable structure, of course. Thank you.
Can I just follow up on that? For Coral, what do you define between upstream and midstream?
If your question is what do you split between the parts, so the upstream parts, so all the drilling, completion, subsea equipment, all that is sponsored money, but not financeable under the current structure. The machinery to liquefy. Sorry, I was on mute. The upstream is all subsea equipment, drilling, completion. So that's all likely to be equity financed by the sponsors. The equipment to liquefy, be it the onshore trains, be it the offshore floating LNG equipment, that's what I called midstream, and that's likely to be a tolling structure with significant leverage.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Okay, I was wondering, there's no other questions. So, ladies and gentlemen, I hope this session has been useful. Thank you for attending. The way forward, I think, is clear, and I assure you that the priority at every level of our organization is to deliver on the outlined strategy. I speak on behalf of my colleagues at the management team when I say that our ultimate goal is to ensure sustainable delivery of the value to our shareholders. We will do that by enhancing our strategic path, focus on development our E&P projects, and on optimizing of our downstream and gas business, while maintaining a healthy financial position and keeping an eye on future business sustainability. To those I already had the opportunity to meet in the past, I hope to see you again very shortly. To those I haven't had the chance to meet yet, I hope to meet you in the coming months, and we will be very happy to exchange views about GALP during these exciting times ahead. Thank you all, and have a good day.
That will conclude today's conference call. Thank you for your participation. Ladies and gentlemen, you may now disconnect.